Section 2, Life During the Depression. An American Story. A young girl with the unusual name of Dynamite Garland was living with her family in Cleveland, Ohio in the 1930s when her father, a railroad worker, lost his job. Unable to afford rent, they gave up their home and moved into a two-car garage. The hardest aspect of living in a garage was getting through the frigid winters. "We would sleep with rugs and blankets over the top of us," Garland later recalled. "In the morning, we'd get some snow and put it on the stove and melt it and wash round our faces." When Garland's father found a part-time job in a Chinese restaurant, the family lived on those fried noodles. On Sundays, the family looked for houses for sale. "That was a recreation during the Depression," said Garland. "You'd go and see where you'd put this and where you could put that, and this is going to be my room." In this way, the family tried to focus on better times. Movies and radio programs also provided a brief escape from their troubles, but the struggle to survive left little room for pleasure. Adapted from Hard Times. The Depression worsens. In 1930, 1,352 banks suspended operations across the nation, more than twice the number of bank failures in 1929. The Depression grew steadily worse during Hoover's administration. By 1933, more than 9,000 banks had failed. In 1932 alone, some 30,000 companies went out of business. By 1933, more than 12 million workers were unemployed, about one-fourth of the workforce. Average family income dropped from $2,300 in 1929 to $1,600 just 3 years later. Lining up at soup kitchens. People without jobs often went hungry. Whenever possible, they joined bread lines to receive a free handout of food or lined up outside soup kitchens, which private charities set up to give poor people a meal. Peggy Terry, a young girl in Oklahoma City during the Depression, later told an interviewer how each day after school, her mother sent her to the soup kitchen. "If you happened to be one of the first ones in line, you didn't get anything but water that was on top. So we'd ask the guy that was ladling out soup into the buckets. Everybody had to bring their own bucket to get the soup. He'd dip the greasy, watery stuff off the top. So we'd ask him to please dip down to get some meat and potatoes from the bottom of the kettle. But he wouldn't do it." Quoted in Hard Times. Living in makeshift villages. Families or individuals who could not pay their rent or mortgage lost their homes. Some of them, paralyzed by fear and humiliation over their sudden misfortune, simply would not or could not move. Their landlord would then ask the court for an eviction notice. Court officers called bailiffs, then ejected the non-paying tenants, piling their belongings in the street. Throughout the country, newly homeless people put up shacks on unused or public lands, forming communities called shanty towns. Blaming the president for their plight, people referred to such places as Hoovervilles. In search of work or a better life, many homeless and unemployed Americans began to wander around the country, walking, hitchhiking, or most often, riding the rails. These wanderers, called hobos, would sneak past railroad police to slip into open boxcars on freight trains for a ride to somewhere else. They camped in hobo jungles, usually situated near rail yards. Hundreds of thousands of people, mostly boys and young men, wandered from place to place in this fashion. Geography. The Dust Bowl. Farmers soon faced a new disaster. Since the beginnings of homesteading on the Great Plains, farmers had gambled with nature. Their plows had uprooted the wild grasses that held the soil's moisture. The new settlers then blanketed the region with wheat fields. When crop prices dropped in the 1920s, however, Midwestern farmers left many of their fields uncultivated. Then, beginning in 1932, a terrible drought struck the Great Plains. With neither grass nor wheat to hold the scant rainfall, the soil dried to dust. From the Dakotas to Texas, America's pastures and wheat fields became a vast dust bowl. Winds whipped the arid earth, blowing it aloft and blackening the sky for hundreds of miles. When the dust settled, It buried crops and livestock and piled up against farmhouses like snow. No matter how carefully farm families sealed their homes, dust covered everything in the house. As the drought persisted, the number of yearly dust storms grew from 22 in 1934 to 72 in 1937. Some Midwestern and Great Plains farmers managed to hold on to their land, but many had no chance. If their withered fields were mortgaged, they had to turn them over to the banks. Then, nearly penniless, many families packed their belongings into old cars or trucks and headed west, hoping for a better life in California. Since many migrants were from Oklahoma, they became known as Okies. In California, they lived in makeshift roadside camps and remained homeless and impoverished. Reading check. Explaining. What chain of events turned the once fertile Great Plains into the Dust Bowl? Escaping the Depression. Despite the devastatingly hard times, Americans could escape if only for an hour or two through entertainment. Most people could scrape together the money to go to the movies, or they could sit with their families and listen to one of the many radio programs broadcast across the country. The Hollywood Fantasy Factory. Ordinary citizens often went to the movies to see people who were rich, happy, and successful. The 60 to 90 million weekly viewers walked into a fantasy world of thrills and romance. Comical screenplays offered a welcome release from daily worries. Groucho Marx wisecracked, while his brother's antics provoked hilarity in such films as Animal Crackers. Many European actors, writers, and directors, fleeing economic hardship and the threat of dictatorships, went to Hollywood in the 1920s and 1930s. Two European women emerged as superstars. Germany's Marlene Dietrich portrayed a range of roles with subtlety. Swedish actress Greta Garbo often played a doomed beauty, direct and unhesitating in her speech and actions. Moviegoers also loved cartoons. Walt Disney produced the first feature-length animated film, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, in 1937. Its box office appeal may have spurred MGM 2 years later to produce The Wizard of Oz, a colorful musical that lifted viewers' spirits. Even when films focused on serious subjects, they usually contained a note of optimism. In Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, James Stewart plays a naive youth leader who becomes a senator. He dramatically exposes the corruption of some of his colleagues and calls upon his fellow senators to see the American political system as the peak of what man's carved out for himself after centuries of fighting for something better than just jungle law. Gone with the Wind, an elaborately costumed film nearly 4 hours long, topped the Depression-era epics. Its heroine, Scarlett O'Hara, played by British actress Vivian Leigh, struggles to maintain her life on a Georgia plantation during and after the Civil War. Romance enters as Clark Gable, playing the masterful Rhett Butler, woos Scarlett. Audiences found inspiration in Scarlett's unassailable will to survive. On the Air. While movie drama captured the imagination, radio offered entertainment on a more personal level. People listened to the radio every day, gathering around the big wooden box in the living room. It could have been the voice of the president or a newscaster that held their attention. More often, it was the comedy of Jack Benny or George Burns and Gracie Allen, or the adventures of a hero like the Green Hornet. One of the most popular heroes was the Lone Ranger, who fought injustice in the Old West with the help of his faithful Indian companion, Tonto. The listener needed only to picture the hero with a black mask hiding his identity as he fired a silver bullet to knock a gun from an outlaw's hand. Daytime radio dramas carried their stories over from day to day. Programs such as The Guiding Light depicted middle-class families confronting illness, conflict, and other problems. These short dramas allowed listeners to escape into a world more exciting than their own. The show's sponsors were often makers of laundry soaps, so the shows were nicknamed soap operas. While a depression tore at the fabric of many towns, radio created a new type of community. Even strangers found common ground in discussing the lives of radio characters. Reading check. Evaluating. What movies and radio shows entertained Americans during the Depression? The Depression in Art. Art and literature also flourished in the harsh and emotional 1930s. The homeless and unemployed became the subject of pictures and stories as artists and writers tried to portray life around them. Thomas Hart Benton and Grant Wood led the Regionalist School, which emphasized traditional American values, especially those of the rural Midwest and South. Wood's most famous painting, American Gothic, portrays a stern farmer and his daughter in front of their humble farmhouse. The portrait pays tribute to no-nonsense Midwesterners, while at the same time gently making fun of their severity. Novelists such as John Steinbeck added flesh and blood to journalists' reports of poverty and misfortune. Their writing evoked both sympathy for their characters and indignation at social injustice. In The Grapes of Wrath, published in 1939, Steinbeck tells the story of an Oklahoma family fleeing the Dust Bowl to find a new life in California. Steinbeck had seen firsthand the plight of migrant farm families uprooted by the Dust Bowl. After visiting camps of these families, he had a better understanding of their fears. He described people in flight along Route 66. Inside one old jalopy sat the members of a family, worrying. There goes a gasket. Got to go on. Find a nice place to camp. The food's getting low. The money's getting low. When we can't buy no more gas, what then? Danny in the back seat wants a cup of water. Little fella's thirsty. From The Grapes of Wrath. Other novelists of this time influenced literary style itself. In The Sound and the Fury, for example, author William Faulkner shows what his characters are thinking and feeling before they speak. Using this stream-of-consciousness technique, he exposes hidden attitudes of Southern whites and African Americans in a fictional Mississippi county. Another Southern writer, Thomas Wolfe, uses the facts of his own life to examine the theme of artistic creation in such powerful novels as Look Homeward, Angel. While the written word remained powerful, the printed image was growing in influence. Magazine photographers roamed the nation armed with the new 35mm cameras, seeking new subjects. Photojournalist Margaret Burke White's striking pictures, displayed in Fortune magazine, showed the ravages of drought. In 1936, Time magazine publisher Henry Luce introduced Life, a weekly photojournalism magazine that enjoyed instant success. Reading check. Examining. How did artists, photographers, and writers such as John Steinbeck reflect the characteristics of the 1930s? National Geographic, Geography and History, Hoover Dam. American farmers and settlers in the low-lying valleys of Southern California and southwestern Arizona have been tapping the waters of the Colorado River for more than a century. Thanks to irrigation canals, the parched desert valleys became year-round gardens that provided fruit and vegetables for the nation. At times, however, the unpredictable river would decrease to a trickle. Other times it became a raging torrent, destroying all in its path. The federal government decided to dam the Colorado to control it. In 1931, construction began in Black Canyon, whose high rock walls made it an ideal site. Here on the border between Arizona and Nevada would rise one of the most ambitious engineering projects the world had ever seen, the Hoover Dam. Named after President Herbert Hoover, the dam was built in the middle of a forbidding desert. Everything had to be imported, including labor. There was no shortage of candidates. The country was in the grips of the Great Depression. Thousands of unemployed workers flocked to the remote canyon. To accommodate them, an entire town was built, Boulder City, Nevada. The new arrivals faced brutal conditions. Men worked in three shifts around the clock. Summer temperatures climbed higher than 120 degrees in the canyon, and even those who worked at night had to endure temperatures of more than 85 degrees. Still, the project was completed in less than 5 years. Lake Mead, the 110-mile-long reservoir created by the dam, is large enough to hold 2 years' worth of the average flow of the Colorado River, enough to cover the entire state of New York with 1 foot of water. the benefits to the Southwest were immense. Hoover Dam created much-needed employment. It also provided a regular supply of water, irrigating over 1 million acres of rich agricultural land and producing hydroelectric power, which has allowed southwestern cities to grow.
Thank you.